Hey friends, I'm Lee Brown. Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Now, today's guest is Mark McGuire, but before you get super excited like I did, because I thought maybe it was that guy who played for the Cardinals and has the home run record, but it's not that Mark McGuire. This one though, so smart. And the conversation is NSFW. There are a couple of bleeps in it because we were having a really fun conversation. So just forgive the bleeps, which you hear on Crazy Shit. I know you're cool with that, because the knowledge he drops, insane. And it's my first time ever encountering a melting body. So enjoy the conversation. I hope I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
So talk to me about real estate a little bit. So you started in the residential side. Where in the country are you?
Yeah, so I'm northeast, outside Philadelphia suburbs, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, Bucks County, Pennsylvania. We serve
Bucks County. That's where the good stone is from. I know Bucks County stone.
Well, there you go.
I actually sold a house here that was made out of it.
Really?
Struck down here like 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, so Bucks County's got some pretty, I mean, it's not mainline money, where like mainline is like more, you know, Montgomery County and then Chester County. Like it was actually named for the train line that was into Philly. That's why it's called the mainline. But all the old money, like all the executives kept pushing farther and farther and farther out. So Montgomery Bucks Counties was where we serve. And I'm basically, you know, started for in residential space and then started investing. So I got my license in 12. Very convenient time to have entered real estate, because
that's when the army crawl out was starting. So you got in very gully.
Yep. I remember when people were like, you'd get a listing and it would just sit, and you begged somebody to show the listing. It wasn't like, oh, please bring me a good offer.
No,
it was like, please just show my property.
Somebody go set up a showing. These sellers are going to kill my nerves. And they're like, I'll go look at it. And they report back like, it's fine.
They're like, yeah, like my buyers are going to take some time to think about it. And then you on the agent side were like,
what can we
do? I'll talk to you when you got, just let me know what you guys think when you come to your own conclusions 2 weeks from now. Now, you know, in the market that we've been in the last 2 years, it's like, oh, hey, by the way, you have 1 hour to put together the world's worst terms ever. And as far as you're concerned as a buyer, wave your like firstborn child, wave everything, give your firstborn child away. And settle in 30 days and like, I don't know, like appraisal, not an appraisal.
And the seller wants to stay for 6 months after closing too. Don't forget that part. They want to lease back for free because they don't have anywhere to go. But you know, it's interesting though, because the world you're talking about from 2012, we have a lot of real estate professionals who've only been in the business since 2020. They got in at the beginning of COVID.
They have no
idea what a normal market looks like, much less a challenged market. So I think it's going to be a wild west for more than just a minute. So you started off at, I mean, looking back, we can say it was a good time to get started. At the time, what a rough time to get started, because buyers were still hesitant and sellers were a lot of them unable to sell, the ones who could. I mean, what a crazy time. And then what happened? You said residential wasn't your jam. How long did it take you to figure that out?
So residential 100% was not my jam. Kind of really learned that in like 2019. I like business. That's what I do like. And I love residential. There's all sorts of protection measures in place. And furthermore, like, you know, the people that like what kills me is the wholesaling, right? You get the people that are sending a million pieces of mail. And like, look, if you're a wholesaler, like, I'm sorry, I'm about to knock you right now. But
because we'll point out there are a few good wholesalers who do things correctly and with the best of intentions, but it is not all wholesalers. Let's just point that out. The couple of good ones of you that are about to get mad, we're not talking about you. We're talking about all the rest of them. So carry on, Mark.
Yeah. So like a lot of wholesalers, they call them equity strippers, and they just strip equity away from people who just don't know that they have it. Right. And a lot of this, like where I'm at, where I see it, is like older houses, I call them like the grandmom specials, that, you know, the husband's passed away and the husband traditionally dealt with the finances, which was like super common with gender roles, at least in my area. And, you know, now the grandmom, you know, they bought their house for $30,000. It's worth probably for real 150 to 200,000 bucks. And if it's fixed up, you know, they go and they'd get four, right? And you get someone who comes in and says, hey, yeah, I'll give you 100,000 bucks. And they just start low and just see where like the yes point is.
Right.
And you're just taking advantage of people, like sweet little people that like, they don't even know what they don't know. And they're looking at it as a come up because they bought it for 30,000 as far as they know. So they tripled their money.
And it's cash and they can have it right now and there's no inspections and it's going to be so easy. You can have your money in 7 days.
Yeah. So it's one thing, like while I have come across opportunities where I could have 100% done that, in my moral integrity was like, man, that's not the right way to do it. And hey, this is worth a lot more than this. And like that person has that one house, right? Like that's what they got. And I don't feel someone else, a lot of people, they'll just say, hey, it's a good deal for me, so I'll take it. Like to me, I'm not about that, like, you know, zero sum game. I'm about the win-win. So commercial.
But I mentioned the wholesalers doing it right, though. For you who are listeners who are thinking it all sounds icky, the wholesalers should do it right. Do tell grandma, I can give you 100 cash as is in 7 days, or we can fix it up and you can get X, or we can do it on the regular market and get Y. The good ones are giving all the scenarios. And sometimes grandma will say, I need the cash. I need this to go away. And she would choose the lowest option. But the ones who make us angry are the ones who do not give the full spectrum of scenarios, because as the property owner, she should know all the options. And this might be the best option for somebody in a bad spot. But too often, it's what Mark's describing of they weren't given the whole story. And so the investor wins and the homeowner is left out in the cold, and that's not right. So I have to add that in, because some people do need an out, but it's not nearly as often as it's happening.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that are just getting told, they're getting sold a bill of goods and they're getting told things that aren't true. And that's the part to me that doesn't resonate. So commercially, honestly, it comes down to like, may the best man win. And, you know, if you can, commercially, you're rewarded for your ability to create revenue and manage expenses. That's how value is derived. Right. So commercially, you have net operating income divided by your cap rate equals your valuation. And in an up market, that's going to be good for you. You know what I mean? Now, down market, we'll see what happens in the next 3 to 5 years as things start to turn around. But
and creativity is going to have to come in the next market as you see different commercial spaces get repurposed for transitional uses. That's a whole different discussion. And so I think that starts to flow in there with the numbers, because I think it's going to be a whole different market 5 years from now than it is right now.
100%. And I think
space usage and all that.
Well, I mean, you look at malls and you look at, you know, as Amazon's kind of pecking away at their market share of retail. And you look at, you look at all sorts of things. They're all coming at it. So I'll be interested to see that. I think there's going to be some repurposing of space, but also debt terms are so different, you know, right now. And that's the thing in the residential world, right? You have 30 year and you have 15 year, like, and they're fixed. Commercially, you have 20 year, 25 year, 30 year amortization. Then you have interest only periods. Then you have wraps. Then you have swaps. Then you have,
don't forget your balloons. They need the balloons.
Yeah. And then you got 5 year, 7 year, 10 year terms. So it's like you have all these different things. And that's what took me. So like I really started to get, like I spent my time, like 2013, I bought my first property, 2015, bought my second one, 2017. Then I bought my personal residence, which was a small, like modest, like twin home. Cause I'm like, I want to keep my burn rate low so I can keep my savings rate high. And that's how, like, then bought next year, I bought a fourplex and then a duplex. Then I bought like 11 units, then another 4 units. So it just kind of kept going. And I started to learn about commercial debt and I started to do syndications. So I was doing commercial syndications as a limited partner or an LP, where you literally write a check for $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, whatever the investment requires. And then you get access to knowledge for the sponsor to say, hey, here's our underwriting. Here's the business plan. Here's like our thought process around costs. And like, here's the market. Here's why we like this market. Here's the factors we like. So all that happened, and I started doing that from like 2017 until 2019. And I was like, damn, I can do this for me. So that was like how the transition from residential to commercial really happened. And it wasn't until 2020 where I really started to shift.
All right. So I'm kind of fascinated by your viewpoint on that. And I've had several people on the show talking about syndications. And by the way, friends, if you need more information on that, just click on one of the episodes about syndication. There's a lot of the definition and background in that. But you made an amazing point, because often they just talk about people participating in the syndicate. They fail to mention what you actually bought was not just the financial potential. You bought the knowledge. And that's an amazing way to think about it, because too often, when it goes back to what we were saying about wholesalers, they want to jump in, make as much cash as possible, line their pockets and move on. And you're investing in somebody else's idea and their business plan, but it's so you can grow and gain. And hopefully there is a financial benefit to the end of it. That's not guaranteed, of course, but you're guaranteed to learn things. And I love that perspective. And it pretty much applies to everything around real estate if you're doing it correctly.
Well, it's all about getting, you know, you got to learn before you can earn.
And it's about good to great, right? I see you got Jim's book on the shelf behind you.
Yep,
there.
Yeah. Yep. So it's all about learning before you can earn. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, everybody wants to come in and just make money. Like, you can't be the CEO if you don't know like the multiple facets of a company, right?
Right.
And I did condos, like single family condo. Like, I bought my first single family condo in 2013. And I mean, it was like,
that was the first property, was a condo?
Yep. Yep. For me. Yeah. And so I was working in property management at the time. So I had my real estate license. I was working in property management as the assistant to the property manager, meaning like as the assistant to the maintenance guy, right? Like,
you're
I was
Dwight
like
Dwight Schrute of that property management.
I guy. Was not even Dwight Schrute. Like, I was,
were Ryan when he was an intern.
I was basically Kevin.
Oh, Kevin.
Yeah. Bless his heart. So I was the guy that got every shitty job. Like, whatever the job was that nobody wanted to do.
Go do this, Mark.
Hey, Mark. There's an attic that's like accumulated crap for the last, 20 years. And it's 110 degrees today. That's not the temperature in the attic. That's just the outside temperature. So do me a favor. Can you clean that outside? It's going to take about 7 or 8 hours. Cha-ching. Sold. So I was that guy. And, taught me a lot about what I didn't want to do when I grew up.
Sure.
And really, that was a means to an end for me. I was playing in a band professionally at the time, and I would do that in between like touring and recording and all this stuff. So like, I had flexibility with it, which was the trade-off. And I made pretty good money for the time. But like, I literally was the guy that got all the work that no one else wanted to do. And I did it long enough where I got to learn some of the trades and learn some of the other stuff. So then when I bought that condo, I knew how to do all this stuff. Because right. I had been doing that since like 2007, 2008. So I had been grinding and doing all the crap work till I learned plumbing and electrical and flooring and painting and finishing and all that stuff. And it got to the point where like, I could do it, and or I had the connections to bring in people that I'm like, hey, I know how to do this, but I'm not that good, to where I feel good about the end result I could produce.
Well, and even so, you hire somebody, you actually know if they're doing it correctly, not just that you know what to ask of them, but you know what it is. And I think there's a huge knowledge gap for a lot of investors in this space, because they have to hire everything out because they have no knowledge, but then they hire it out and you have to have 100% trust in your subs. And I wish we lived in a world where you could 100% trust all your subs, but that's not really the labor scenario right now.
Yeah. And honestly, it's never the labor scenario. I mean, I don't care what market you're in. So, I mean, when push really came to shove, it was honestly just doing that allowed me to kind of like scale up. And it wasn't like I went from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 to 32. Like, I mean, in theory, that's good that it would work that way, but you'd have to find properties that fit Correct. That mold first. And so, I mean, I think it's kind of one of those things. It is a gradual but sudden. And then all of a sudden, like 2020, bought 11 units, then 2 condos. And then like, and on that time, like that was what I was buying outside of like the GP side on the syndications and self storage. We added in 2021, about 400,000 net rentable square feet of self storage.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime while also managing sky-high fuel cost at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now. and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link,
www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content.
So how did you pick up a self-storage facility? Were you out there prospecting for it, or did it come to you through your networks?
No. So I was working with Hearthfire Self-Storage and Hearthfire Capital. We basically syndicate self-storage. I got introduced through a group I'm in called GoBundance to Sergio and Corinne Altamare. Phenomenal people, love them to death. And they basically were looking to, Serge and Corinne got started in self-storage in like 2017. And self-storage had a meteoric rise in like 2020, like right after the post-pandemic, because self-storage captures transition.
Yeah.
So they had a meteoric rise in revenue and rate because everybody was moving. Everybody was moving everywhere. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're moving up, you're moving out of a rental in the city, you're moving to another rental because you need a bigger space because now you're working from home. Self-storage captures transition. And that, like, Serge and Corinne had already been down the road exploring self-storage, understanding the dynamics, understanding the tech stack, understanding the operations. They had spent a couple of years doing that, got their first facility in 2019, and then were looking to grow bigger. And I came on board when we were acquiring a 3-property, like 80,000 square foot portfolio in central Pennsylvania.
So in that transition, you've got, it's a big move, right? So from residential to multifamily is a fairly smooth transition once you learn the numbers, because it's still residential form housing. To go to self-storage is an entirely different space. So what was the biggest lesson you learned in making that transition, or what was the mindset shift?
Well, the mindset shift was like, wow, I know enough to do this. Like, that was actually the mindset shift. If you want to boil it down to the simplest thing,
that's amazing.
Like, I'm like, yo, damn, I got this. Yeah. So I remember thinking, like, when I would see these deals and sponsors, I was a long time looking at syndication deals constantly, like vetting them, evaluating them, looking at the business plans, looking at the underwriting assumptions, debt, you know, loan to value, construction costs, looking at what people were doing from a tactical standpoint. And I was doing it in industrial, hospitality, multifamily, self-storage. I actually got exposed to when my family was doing some 1031 exchange work into these Delaware statutory trusts, because most syndicators won't accept 1031 funds, have to be through a TIC agreement. It's all this crazy stuff. Google it. But it really came down to, I can do it. It was a mindset shift in belief in myself, and that, like, these people that I had put on a pedestal really weren't that different from me. And it was just up to me to just execute.
I think that's true even of buying that first rental property. And a lot of people never buy the first investment because of what you just said. They just don't think they're qualified, capable, knowledgeable enough, and they don't do anything. And then you wind up farther down the road and say, golly, I wish I'd started doing something sooner, because you often do know enough if you'll just pay attention and read past the headline.
I mean, super transparently, I wish I had got started in commercial sooner. The velocity. Now, granted, the velocity can work both ways. The velocity can work really well in your favor, and it can work not so really well against your favor. When if you get the project wrong and you don't know what you're doing, you can get burned and burned. You can get wiped out. And that's the thing. It's like, you just got to push yourself where it's not going to wipe you out to the point that, like, literally you're zero.
And I know it's a wildly unpopular thing for me to say, but that's also why I didn't ever worry about people that would talk about President Trump's couple of bankruptcies. I mean, he bets big in that commercial space. Sometimes you get it wrong, but you look at what got built after those failures has been life-changing for a lot of people, as far as the number of jobs that are created, the amount of space that's created. You can't look at a failure as a mistake necessarily. It's just part of that transition period of knowledge. And hopefully you just don't make the mistakes multiple times, but the bigger the stakes, the bigger the failures. And it's gotta be okay. I think the world has gotten allergic to failing. And if you're going to make commercial investments, you better be able to fail or able to be creative, because we already mentioned the transition of space, which is happening now. And I think it's pretty exciting. But if you're not open to creativity, your bigger opportunity to fail is right in front of you. So anyway, that being said, of course, we kind of rambled about a lot of stuff here, but my show is all about the crazy shit in real estate and the things that you've encountered along the way that make you say, nobody's ever going to believe this. I'd love to know what story you came here to tell that's actually going to top the opening conversation about driving cars. And so what you got?
Yeah. So the craziest story I have about real estate was before I ever bought my first one. I was working as the maintenance guy, or the assistant to the maintenance guy. And I was cleaning stoves that day. And I happened to be in the supply room. And I was like, huh, this is strange. There's like some like water condensation on the like the concrete hex grid above me. So like the way that this building was constructed, it has concrete like flooring in between levels. This is a garden style apartment complex, 50 unit building. So I'm cleaning these stoves, which were from 1970. The particular tenant mix we have is very, very hard on stoves. They cook on high heat all day long. So they melt all these stove terminals. And all we did is replace new ones. So we said, hey, we're going to give you the ones from 1970 because they have ceramic block. So I'm cleaning them, just getting like scraping blade oil off of all of them. It like kind of smells a little interesting. Like the smell was different. And I'm like, I can't place this smell. So I get a call from my boss, who is the maintenance guy. He's like, hey, can you go check on unit D8? I haven't seen the guy in a couple of weeks. And yeah, they're just saying that like there's a smell coming from his unit. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. D8 is right above, directly above my head. Did not know this at the time. So I'm not the head maintenance guy. I should not be handling a potential death claim, by the way. So I go up the stairs and I walk into the hallway and I'm like, what is this awful smell? It just smells like rot. And at this point, I'm like, it's all starting to hit me. I'm like, oh, there's water. Oh my God, that's a body. That is a body. So I'm like, no, this can't be. This can't be. This can't be. So I go outside. The mailman happens to be outside the mailbox cluster. And I'm like, I'm stalling now because in my gut, I know the truth here. I'm going to find the dead guy. And so I like hit the mailman up and I'm like, hey, can you go check out unit D8? He's like, oh yeah, that mailbox is completely full. I haven't put any mail in his mailbox because that mail hasn't been taken out for 2 weeks. So I'm like, great. It's confirmed now. So I knock on the door and I literally step in and there's just flies and just like the smell I will never forget. And I literally got 2 feet in. I see the light on in the bathroom and it looks like a black shirt in the bathroom. And I just like started to feel like I'm going to vomit. I just ran out. I was like, I can't do this. So I called my boss. I was like, hey man, pretty sure I knew the guy's name was George. I was like, pretty sure George died for like a black t-shirt in the bathroom. Oh, by the way, this man was 350 pounds. So the cops get called. There's two cops show up and there's a young guy and an older guy. And the older guy makes the young guy go in.
Of course he does.
So the young guy comes in, the dude walks back into the hallway and he comes back white as a ghost. And the guy goes, yeah, he's dead. And the guy's, are you all right? And apparently this is this guy's first death call.
Of course it was.
So then you call the coroner, the coroner has to come out, be like, yeah, he is melting into the earth. And I'm like, oh, hey, by the way, he's melting into the floor in the unit below him where I've been working all day. Yep.
So was he in the tub? Is that what the water was? Or was
dude it died. Yo, so this guy, so apparently
the body liquids coming out of his body.
Well, your body is composed of mostly water. So when you die, first of all, my wife actually is an ICU nurse. So when you die, usually you release your bowels.
Right.
And then also as your body decomposes, because he was sitting there in an unair conditioned apartment for 2 weeks in the middle of July. Let me tell you how that went. So
that explains plus.
Yeah. So then basically, the water of your body just starts to leak out because you lose retention. And so all this guy's like basically biological fluid was dripping down into the room where I was working all day.
How many times did you shower after that day? Like 14 times? Stop showering because I don't know that I ever would.
To be transparent, I really don't know how many times I showered, but it was I stood in the shower and just contemplated my job for a while after that.
As your property manager boss is giggling somewhere, the maintenance.
Oh, and that guy totally sold me up the river. And,
he's calling his buddy at the police department. He's like, I got my young guy. Did you get yours? Ha ha ha.
Yeah. He sold me up the river. He knew he was selling me up the river. And I was just like, dude, that's messed up, man. What the heck? I was like 20 years old, taking a death call.
I mean, what do you do next? Does the coroner take the body so you don't have to mess with it? And then you have to clean the place out? Like,
so it's totally not on me at that moment in time, right? It's because like the coroner's got to come in and like confirm that, oh, yes, I, as the assistant to the maintenance guy, did not go and kill this guy 2 weeks ago and then just report it after the fact.
I forgot about that piece. So you were being questioned?
I did get questioned. I'm like, dude, listen, I don't want to be here. So whatever it is that I need to provide to you to not be around this any longer, like, have it here. Like, what do you want me to do? So that happened. And then you call in like a hazmat, like the restoration companies a lot of times. So I don't know, you know, pick one ever in your area, but like
we call this company. ServPro. They're a national franchise.
So ServPro will do hazmat. So that's a hazmat issue that a ServPro franchise will handle.
That's why I would never buy a ServPro franchise. I'll just be honest with you, because I thought they just cleaned up after floods and fires.
Floods, fires, death.
Dead people. No.
Yeah.
Has anyone
ever told you about finding a dead person who melted?
Not that melted. I mean, I had a dead guy, but he was in an open house and the agent was holding the open house who didn't know the seller was dead in the master bedroom, but it was a fresh death. It wasn't like 2 weeks of flies and melting.
Who found him?
The listing agent did while he had buyers on the property. So then he had to call the police and say, I think my seller's dead. And he had to tell the buyers, you can't buy the house right now. And then he never sold the house because the family took the listing. So it's a whole
thing. Oh my God, that poor soul.
And he's an amazing agent too. I love him all to pieces. It's been his go-to story for years. And people wonder why realtors drink.
I wasn't even a realtor at this point. I was just an unassuming idiot at the time.
And you probably thought realtors were the fancy people who just got to dress up.
I did. Yeah, I did have that assumption at one point in time. And then like I'd be going to work in my dress clothes because my mom's dream, when I dropped out of college, my mom was like really upset. She's a teacher, right? So when I dropped out of college to go do the band thing, my mom was like, really, the Christmas was really bad that year. It was fall semester. And then I went to do real estate and I was like dressing in a tie and like dress clothes. And it was all of a sudden meeting her image expectation of what I would be when I grew up.
Oh, she was.
And then I'd come home with like ruined shirts and my shoes were scuffed. And cause I'd crawl around in attics and be like in bank owned properties. Cause 2012, that's what that was.
Yeah.
And then she'd yell at me for that. I'm like, Mom, what do you want me to do? Keep a change of clothes in the car and show up? I was like looking like a bum. Like, what do you want?
So before I let you off the show, what band were you in?
The name of the band was Bel Air.
So what kind of band was this? Was it a covers band for punk or what?
No, it was originals. You know, we ended up getting signed to RCA Records. I actually did not take the deal. I had more money pending in commissions than I was going to get from the signing bonus. And I'm like, I'm going to sign 7 album cycles, which is like 14 to 21 years, depending upon timing. I was like, this is a bad deal and I don't have to take this and I'm not going to sign this. So I ended up parting ways. And I mean, it was good. It was mutual. Like, music was shifting. It became much more electronic. I played drums and I was very like, I liked the organic sound, like the Kings of Leon, like the script and like that vibe. Loved that era of music. And then it became like Skrillex and like, you know, Avicii. And like, I like that, but like, I like real rock and like real music. And that just got totally missed.
You love the Gypsy Kings, don't you? Because that's my voice. I love the Gypsy Kings.
I have not heard of the Gypsy Kings and now I'm going to check them out.
Oh,
I insulted you. I'm sorry.
Prepare yourself for like amazing acoustic everything. No auto-tune, obviously.
Beautiful. Well, consider me searching them right now.
Consider yourself addicted here in just a minute. And then you're going to have, there's this really beautiful couple of romantic songs that you will dance with your wife and she'll fall back in love with you again. It's amazing.
Cool. Cool. Love it.
So if anybody wants to reach out to you about what you're doing in syndication or in any of the spaces where you're currently educating other investors, how can they best find you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. That's the best way. LinkedIn.com/investingwithmark. You want to check out Hearthfire, hfircapital.com. /contact.
I am going to check out Hearthfire because that's the next thing I want to do is sell storage. And I have not ever pulled the trigger because I've only done residential and multifamily. Got to get past that mindset. So maybe I'll be your next student of self-storage there because North Carolina just named the number one state economy, the number one place for businesses to move, which means we need more self-storage. So
crazy market there. Crazy.
Hey, Mark, thanks for coming on the show. This is one of the best conversations I've had. I have enjoyed the heck out of this.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Lee.
All right, friends, if you enjoyed Mark, then give him some comments and some likes and loves down here on the show. All of his contact information is in the show notes for this episode. So please reach out and learn some stuff. You might get to learn it alongside me In the meantime, I'll see you next time on Crazy Shit.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more Crazy Shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.